This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 27.
Hi, and welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, where we talk about comic books. iFanboy.com is a website that we here have started to talk about comics and things that are going on in comics, and every week we do a Pick of the Week where we'll read a bunch of books, and then one of us will write a review up of the best book we read that week, and then we come here and we chat about it on the podcast for your downloadable enjoyment. I am Josh. I'm here with Connor.
Hello.
There he is. And Ron, who had the pick of the week this week,
hey.
Take it away.
All right, cool. Well, first off, it's good to have you guys back. You guys were in London, and you guys came back earlier than I thought you were. I thought I was going to be doing the solo this weekend, but so it's good to have you.
Sorry to disappoint you.
Yeah, I know, a little disappointed.
Wait until you see what the jet lag kicked in and if this is any better with us here.
Right. Anyway, So this week I only had five or six books, and they were all of the Marvel persuasion. Apparently something's going on in DC, that some big thing's going on, but I don't know anything about that. So something about a year or something, I don't know. But I only got six books in total, and it was one of those weeks where, I don't know if you guys run into this, but like when I look at the shipping list on Monday or Tuesday and plan my purchase, there's always one or two books that I just have a feeling are going to be, that's probably going to be my pick, knowing what the previous issue was or what's coming, what storylines are coming up or whatever. So I kind of resigned myself to be prepared to pick either Annihilation Nova number one or Wolverine Origins number one, because Nova is one of my favorite characters, and it's fantastic that he's in a book again, albeit a miniseries, but still, I'll take any rich writer that I can get. And Wolverine Origins number one, purely because of the genius of the Steve Dillon artwork. So in my head, as I tackled my stack of books, I was like, all right, it's probably going to be those, so let's just get through it and cut to the chase. And then Daredevil number 84 happened.
oh boy did it.
And I wrote in my review that really what made this as Josh types really
what I dropped I dropped something on my
really what made this book so kind of kick ass in my mind was the first three pages, the scene in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And now, the thing is, unfortunately, we're going to have to, to really talk about this, I have to spoil it. So if you haven't read the book, stop listening or skip ahead 10 minutes or whatever.
Yes.
But in the first three pages of the book, it's a prisoner transfer into the prison where Daredevil and Kingpin and Owl and Hammerhead and all these other people are currently incarcerated in. And there's a lot of suspense building up in the first page as to who the prisoner is, and it's Bullseye.
Which was cool, very cool.
Which was very cool. And
all dressed up like Hannibal Lecter.
Exactly, and he didn't even say a word or do anything, and it was just, it wasn't even so much that, it was like the potential of, oh God, now Bullseye's here. Like, what,
right.
What else could happen? So that was pretty good, and then the meat of the book was, you know, Daredevil, you know, facing off with Hammerhead, and the whole act that he puts up that he's just a blind man and he's incapable of doing, you know, anything, and people are just popping in the hospital and in the prison nonstop because he's, you know, fighting injustice, trying to find Foggy's killers. And
one of the things that was really nice too is in that whole time where he's playing his role.
Yep.
Like, there's this current of fear that just goes through everybody. There's this really subtle, like, everyone is totally afraid of him now.
Yep.
And they know it, but nobody says it. And he says specifically, he's like, I don't care if they know.
Right.
As long as they can't prove it.
And he's using his legal mind to say, you know, that if they can't prove it, then it doesn't matter. You know, and, like, even when he has to sneak across the cell blocks and there are cameras and he knows this, he just, you know, puts a bandana on over his head to hide his, you know, and, like, and if he moves quick enough, they won't be able to prove that it's him, you know. So.
It's a very Daredevil-like bandana, isn't it?
Yeah.
It looks like the bandana from the Hulk movie that Daredevil was in.
It looks like the bandana when Wolverine went all crazy in the Onslaught in late 90s when he went feral and for some reason just tied a red bandana around his head as a mask. I never understood that. But, I was waiting for him just to draw like a D on his wife beater, but he didn't do that. So, anyway. So he does
pop out of his cell really simply. He goes, slipping out of the cell isn't much harder.
Yeah, like, I don't... And they didn't explain that.
Yeah, no, he's like, he's just outside of it. I was like, isn't that the hardest part?
It's like, did he slip through the bars? Like, what did he do? Anyway, but it's just interesting, like, again, and, like, it's funny because one of the things is because all three of us are big fans of the HBO series Oz, you know, the prison drama. And one of the things that I always wondered as I was kind of late to the party in that one. But one thing I was kind of wondered is, like, how these prisoners just had free reign of this prison, how they just walked around wherever they want. They're, like, in stairwells and doing, you know. And this kind of takes that as well, where everybody knows how to get around the cell blocks and how to get around the hacks. And it's just, you know, it's interesting, so.
There must be plot devices just to let them do that. That's what I always sort of
suspension of belief. But all in all, it was a good issue. The Bullseye thing was good, but that kind of built up to the last two pages, which, and we were talking about it in the comments on the Pick of the Week, that, you know, sometimes a comic book reaches out and kind of punches you in the face or kicks you in the nuts, and having Bullseye at the very beginning set this up. But then at the very end, to see this kind of dark-haired, kind of menacing guy.
Did you know who it was before you flipped the page?
No, I didn't. I went,
I think that might be. Oh, it is.
Yeah. And I didn't think anything of it. I just thought, okay, this guy, you know, whatever. And he sees, and then he's reading in the front pages, you know, Rampage at Rikers, is Murdoch a madman, you know, the Daily Bugle condemning him again. And he's in this diner, and he sees a woman being mugged. And then you just flip to the next page, and you see him take down the mugger, and then a cops pull up and they pull a gun on him, and he just says, "I surrender, take me away," and his jacket opens up and it's the Punisher. It's just like, and I remember, like, when, like, I, and the thing was, I remember slowly scanning down the page, and when I saw the skull, I was just like, oh damn. I was like, and just like the idea of Daredevil and the Punisher in the prison together, and Bullseye, and, like, it's gonna be mayhem, like, and I would never have even thought about that. Like, what a great device to use, you know, to, like, give him an ally now in prison, you know. And the, like, the little, and do you see in the last panel, like, you, like, it's hard to tell with Lark's art, but do you see, like, a slight suppressed grin on the Punisher? Yeah.
Yes. You want him in there.
Yeah. As the cop freaks out and calls for backup, because the cop is like, oh god, oh, you know. So
this is one of those things I was reading and I thought, I kind of miss the time when not every popular character had his own title.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you read Punisher monthly still, right?
I dropped it, actually.
Right, see, and to me, this is so much more powerful having not seen him in a while. Like, if it's one of those characters people love, but he pops up in books every once in a while.
Yeah.
For a year or two or something like that, that, like, seems to really, like, make the impact a lot greater. And I know that he's running around in his other book right now and doing whatever. But this, to me, felt like old Punisher.
Right.
Like, the one from the Spider-Man books and the Daredevil books where he sort of would just show up every once in a while, and whenever he did, you just go, oh, shit.
Well, that's what they did a few years ago. They had to do it with the Joker. He was showing up too much, and they got rid of him for a year. He didn't show up in a story for a year, so when he did show up, it was actually scary, as opposed to if he's there every month.
Right.
The impact is much greater this way.
Have you noticed on the cover of this issue, by the way, there's a guy who clearly has Daredevil's hair? I guess that's the owl, but on the cover...
You mean Wolverine's hair?
Did I say Daredevil?
Yeah.
I didn't mean Wolverine.
That's the one thing about the owl is that he's got the Wolverine cut. He's had it through the whole thing, so.
Ridiculous.
And I keep saying that these painted covers, I still think Murdoch looks like Ben Urich on these covers. Like, it doesn't look like Murdoch, you know? Like, it's, anyway, but whatever.
He doesn't wear those glasses. That's
the red glass. He's got to wear the red glasses. But,
yeah, but those are like huge Harry Carey glasses.
Yeah. The moon was made of Swiss cheese. Would you eat it? Anyway. I would. this just blew me away, and it blew. And the thing is that like Nova was good, but it's the first issue, and there wasn't there was a ton of action, but it wasn't like earth shattering. And Wolverine Origins, while Dylan's art was awesome, and I really like Dylan's Wolverine because it reminds me a lot of like the early '80s, mid '80s Wolverine.
Why would we need another Origins book?
Well, yeah, that's the thing is that I could care less about this origin crap. Like, I liked it better when I didn't know his origin. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? I liked the mystery a lot better. But
what is the premise of the book?
I don't. He's got his memory back, and now he's trying to get to the bottom of the Weapon X thing, and he broke into the White House, and blah blah blah. So, yeah, it's all Weapon X again, and it's just like whatever. So so that was my week, and also New Avengers came out, which I actually. Full disclosure, I missed when I bought my books on Wednesday and had to go back on Thursday to pick it up, but I wouldn't have rescinded my pick. So, and New Avengers was good, and it's propelling it's good. I think it's good how New Avengers is the tying in the whole House of M event into the next Civil War event. I like how that's kind of it's not setting the stage, but it's being the linchpin between the two kind of storylines. And I really like the twist I don't know if it's a twist, but the plot device at the end. Mm-hmm. Where they figured out why this big unstoppable force that they've been fighting, how he has his powers.
It was a quite classic sort of action-packed everybody all in Avengers issue. I mean, which is funny because many of the complaints sort of held against Bendis is that he's talky and it's silly and it's not whatever. But this is a full on. This to me feels all cosmic-y and George Perez and
Yeah, I mean there was a couple pages panels. Where there was hardly any words. Yeah,
none at
all.
So
it was fun. It was good to read, and it felt real and big stakes and there's that. I think it's a few pages in. It says Cleveland, and it's just the city going all to hell with this giant man who doesn't remind me anything of Dr. Manhattan from The Watchmen. And everybody's just getting their butts handed to him. It's fun. I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes.
Yeah.
Is that all your books?
Yeah, that was all. Like I said, I only got six, so it wasn't.
I actually had more than you this week.
Wow.
That never happens. It's
crazy. Did you pick up the Ex Machina special?
No. Wasn't it a reprint?
No.
It's a standalone story from pre-Mayer days.
Oh, I thought it was
when he was the Great Machine.
Oh, maybe I'll pick that next week.
It's got beautiful art by Chris Sprouse. Who pretty much, if I hadn't looked, I would think it was the same artist, Tony. I think it's no, I can't remember. Tony Harris? No.
Yes.
Yeah, great art. It just in keeping with the whole thing. It's just a story from him back before he was the mayor. It's fun. It looks like is one of two issues. Recommended.
Yeah, it's good.
And I picked up Fury Peacemaker by Ennis and Robertson, Garth Ennis and Derek Robertson, which is about Nick Fury in World War II. Basically just one of his war stories that happens to feature a guy named Nick Fury, but really good. It's getting better. The first two were really good, and the third one, it's just a fun World War II story, about Black Ops going on in World War II and this kick-ass soldier, Nick Fury. Beautiful, beautiful art by Derek Robertson, who's always been a favorite of mine. Connor, did you read Robin?
Yes.
I'm really into this.
It's good. I mean, it's usually me alone.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, like, and I read it when Chuck Dixon was on it, and then I kind of lost interest in whatever. But it's like it's a fun little caper, and he's like on his own, and you're pulling for the little guy, and there's mystery and intrigue going on, and really nice art by Freddie E. Williams II.
Yeah, it is good. It's really good art.
Fun stuff. So I'd recommend that if you're looking for like sort of a new fun, DC book or superhero book to read. That's about my highlights.
Josh and I are a little mentally deficient.
From your trip?
From jet lag.
Yeah.
I would say that I had to go to a different comic store this week because I just was too tired to go to my regular one, and there's a new one in my neighborhood. And they didn't have a lot of the books I normally buy, so my load was smaller this week. It's disappointing.
I'm sorry.
You've got us on a real low note here.
Bringing it down, bringing it down.
The funny thing about Daredevil was I had read, obviously, the Pick of the Week review and the comments before reading the book.
I couldn't help it.
And as I'm reading the book, I'm like, yeah, okay, this is pretty good. I mean, it's not like blowing me away or anything.
I mean, admittedly, it's better when you don't know it.
But then I got to the last two pages and I went, oh.
Yeah, exactly. And then he got kicked in the nuts. And
oh, that's why.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're there clutching onto the table trying to breathe.
Yes.
Just exhaling.
Somebody on the website said something perfectly. How much more gasoline can Brubaker pour on before
he
left the match? And it's a lot of gasoline at this point.
Yeah, that's
he's digging himself a pretty big hole.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he could... I mean, and I trust him implicitly, but, you know, at the end of it, you know, he's going to have to really produce. He's built up the story, which is good, but now he's got to, you know... The comic book people typically have had a problem with ending it.
Right.
They're really good at throwing stuff on the fire and then... So.
Well, I think there's the wild card, which is barely mentioned in this issue, is that whoever this other Daredevil is.
True.
And so, like, I, you know, as much as, you know, like, because the thing is, you think about it, like, how can Matt Murdock ever go back to being Daredevil? And so I you know, and I'm sure whatever Brubaker has planned is going to be great or whatever, but, you know, like, part of me is just like, I hope it's not like we've got Daredevil 2.0 now and that this new person is going to be in Murdock, is behind the scenes kind of, you know, playing Professor Xavier, telling him what to do and helping him out and doing the legal angle, you know, so, I mean, I don't know.
I don't think that'll happen.
How would you answer the question, how can Murdock go back to being Daredevil? Like...
Well,
like I don't see how we can make a resolution that what we want to see, you know. So that's why I think I'm even more enthused.
If I were in charge, I would just do it. Like literally, like these were all great stories and it was fun, but you know, at the end of the day, just get him back into the costume in Hell's Kitchen and sort of make it, you know, start it over again. Not really retcon it, but just say, okay, that stuff all happened and it blew away over, and just sort of gloss over that. Yeah. Because really, at the end of the day, you're just getting good stories. Who cares?
I got a great idea. What they should do is they should wrap up all this Rikers Island stuff, and then they should skip a year. And Matt Murdock's Daredevil, but you don't know how or what happened. I think that would be a great idea. And he could also be mayor.
I think what could happen break his back, and then a French guy who has a bit too much of a temper could come in there and take over for a while, and then Murdock's got to take him down.
He could die. He becomes... There could be four other Daredevils that show up. One is his clone.
One is a robot.
One is, like, Ben Urich. And then one's a robot. One's an alien. And then...
Or he could get, like, this like, ultimate, like, cosmic power and go destroy a planet. And then him and Cyclops make out. And then he kills himself. But then he comes back a year later and proceeds to do that every 3 years.
Talk about a crazy girlfriend.
I know. Poor Scotty. Anyway.
Oh, boy.
It's no wonder he's such a killjoy.
Yeah, exactly. So,
he's dying inside.
Yeah, so that pretty much wraps up this week. But you guys were in London, so did you get to go to a comic store or anything, or did you see comics at all?
We managed to hit a couple. We went after one on purpose, and we ran across another one
by accident.
somebody had mentioned on the site, because I managed to check in just for a couple of seconds, here and there, and somebody had mentioned on the site to go by Forbidden Planet, which is the big famous comic shop in London. I believe there was one in New York.
There is still one in New York.
There is still, but
two in New York, or
there used to be. I think there's only the one now.
Is it any like? It's not as it's not.
No,
no,
no.
It's not as comparable as the one.
That's the one down by Union Square, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. I'm trying to be nice.
The one in London is huge.
Don't try to be nice.
It is. It's big and impressive, and it's a like it's two floors. You get in the upper part, and it's all sort of toys and statues and collectibles and things like that from pretty much anything.
Yeah,
and were the exchange rate not in such a way that everything cost me three times as much as it should have at home, you know, I would have been hard pressed to not buy anything there. And then you go downstairs, and it's got a really nicely organized comic section. And then they've got books and DVDs and movies. It's like a full-on nerdgasm warehouse, pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah, it was overwhelming almost.
But we were there on a, what was it? I guess it was Tuesday?
No.
No, it wasn't
Wednesday.
What day
is today?
Sunday.
It was not a New Comics Day. And
well, is New Comics Day in London, in England, the same as New Comics Day here?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Somebody tell us.
don't think that's possible.
It might be. Overnight shipping, and I guess...
Oh, really, too much, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. But the thought we did have is that it's a really nice place to go browse, but I'd hate to go there on New Comics Day.
True.
I mean, you'd be jostling around, throwing elbows, you know. It's one of those kind of places where there would just be so many people there, which I think, you know, is sort of like, I guess if you go to Hanley's, or if you are out here, and I'm sorry for everybody who we just keep bringing up New York and L.A., but it's what we know. But they're also touchstones that a lot of people have been to if they've ever been to these places. But like here, or here you have Golden Apple Comics in L.A., which is, you know, I used to go there for my weekly books when I first got here, and it's a nightmare. Like, it's just people everywhere because it's like one of the most famous and biggest shops in the country. And there I felt like the same thing. But we also did manage to run across this this shop called either Gosh or Gosh Gosh. I'm not sure. Yeah. It's one of the two.
Gosh.
We saw something that I haven't seen in many, many, many years.
Pogs?
Connor, what did we see?
Well,
you saw Pogs, didn't you? They were Pogs.
It's a cool little store. The most striking thing before we went in was none of the window displays included any superhero books.
Interesting.
And when you walked straight in, the first wall you saw was all indie stuff. To the right was superhero stuff, to the left...
It wasn't just indie stuff, but it was like, you know, Alan Moore stuff and like just sort of adult contemporary comics that, you know, you'd hear about NPR.
Interesting.
And then as you turn to the right, there's the superhero trades and things like that. Go on.
But we went down... This is also two floors, but in a much, 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 much smaller scale. We went downstairs to see what was down there, and...
And there's the porn.
To see the porn.
Right.
Maybe not looking for the porn, but hoping maybe. And not hoping. But there was a mother and two little boys, and the two little boys were going crazy over the back issues trying to get the mother to buy them all kinds of stuff.
Oh, wow.
They were hunting through the bins like days gone by.
Like digging for gold?
Oh, mommy, Superman 52, can I have this? 50p? It was great. Like, they were really excited, and they were, like, kept making these big little stacks of books that they were getting for a bargain.
Oh, that's awesome. You
know? Josh and I kept elbowing each other, and we hung around just to listen to him some more, because it was really hopeful.
Because you don't ever see that anymore, and hopefully they didn't pick up horrible issues from the mid-80s that made no sense.
Don't buy that one.
I know, I was kind of like, we could nudge them, you know, in the direction, and then I thought, you know, that's probably not...
Cool.
But it was very cool, and it was sort of like, oh, look, there's a little bit of hope.
A little bit.
A little bit. Yeah. But it was a nice, really clean little shop.
It was a really good store. I would totally go to that store if I lived there.
Yep.
If they're listening, we like you.
It was called Gosh or Gosh Gosh.
Why don't you know?
Because the front of the store had a sign that said Gosh Gosh, but there was two different signs. It was hard to tell, really.
It was bisected by another sign, so I wasn't sure if it was just advertising to two different areas or not. It's one or the other.
It's right down the block from the British Museum, for anybody's in the area.
Near Russell Square.
All right. Well, so there you go. If you're on vacation in London or if you live in London, go check out Gosh or possibly Gosh Gosh. So. Crikey. Anyway.
Ooh, nice use of vernacular.
Yeah. All right. So while you guys were gone... We actually got a lot of mail this week, and it was tough deciding which ones to do on the podcast, and we're going to do more than we usually do because there were so many good questions. So let's dive right in. Steve, who tends to write in a lot, and we appreciate that, he's had two questions, and see if you can understand why I like these two questions. His first question is that he admits we may or may not want to answer, which is a great way to start. His wife, who he can only get to read Runaways and Trade, which is, hey, you do what you can, Steve. She's constantly pointing out that comics can never be taken seriously until the art is not filled with Pamela Anderson wannabes and the pencilers or colorists stop sticking in nipples all the time. He's beginning to agree with her, so his question is, what do we think? When does it all become adolescent and childish to the point where it detracts from the story? And I agree with Steve, I do not want to answer this question.
He's so prescient.
I don't really see it anymore. I mean, I don't really read anything that has got lots of nipple. I mean, like, I don't really notice it anymore. I don't know if I'm desensitized, but
I think
like
you are.
Well, like, well, for example, like Spider-Woman Origin came out this week, and it was by the Luna Brothers, and she's prominently in it, and there's not a nipple to be found, and she looks fairly realistic, and not really, I mean, but like not overly done, you know. So that's why I don't know that I'm desensitized, or is it really not as prevalent as we think?
Well, on the one hand, everybody's bodies are hyper-realized, men and women. It's just that the women tend to be walking around in skimpier outfits, but the men's bodies are no more realistic than the women's bodies.
Like, look at the shot of the Sentry when the Sentry appears in New Avengers. Look at, is that anatomically correct, Deodato? I don't think so, you know, yeah. So.
But on the other hand, you're talking about an industry dominated by males, so
right. The
women obviously become a... More
well, I think my point more is not that it doesn't exist, but I don't think I buy into the ones that do that anymore. You know, does that make sense, or is that just excuse?
Yeah, no, it totally does. Although, you know, when Frank Cho draws a book, I'm on it. So
right, but I'm on it because he's good, not because he draws boobs.
True. Yeah. But I think the other thing that's coming across here is if the only thing you can get her to read is Runaways, my guess is you're coming from a smaller pool than I would, because I've gotten my wife. To read all sorts of books, but they're not Marvel ones. Right. So, I mean, if you want like to see stuff where you can take the industry seriously and the art form seriously, there is no shortage of non-sexist stuff out there.
Right, and it depends on the content too. I mean, like, is Birds of Prey nipply?
I don't know.
Ed Benes is drawing it. Yes.
Oh, well then, that's too bad.
But you know, if you come outside of that a little bit, I know that the books that my wife reads are Why the Last Man. Which does have a lot of boobs in it, but it's drawn by a woman.
Right, and they're not overly voluptuous, and there are nipples when there need to be, and like that's
yeah.
Sort of thing,
it's just sort of nudity as it occurs.
Well, we're crossing a line here, aren't we?
Nah. Another book that she loves is
nipple
is Box Office Poison Vagina.
Box Office Poison also has lots of nudity.
It has lots of nudity, but I've always made the point that it's realistic nudity, like the people are lumpy and you know. Like it's what people look like when they're naked, actually, in a form of cartoons. But there's all sorts of books out there, and I think we've touched on them in these podcasts that you can get people. Like if you get people to read that don't normally read comics and want to take them seriously, try Andy Watson books from Oni, Slow Newsday or Breakfast Afternoon. You know, that's art. That's serious art.
His recent series, Little Star or Love Fights.
Is that good? Have you been reading that?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I love it. It's over, I think, but it's good.
I want to pick that up. There's just all sorts of things out there that you can use to, you know, if you really want to say how you can take comic books seriously, there's not a better book to read than Mouse, there's just tons of stuff like that.
I mean, basically, I think you're right, is that there's all sorts of stuff, and it's a lot easier to point out the bad than the good.
And in superheroes, it probably is more relevant that the sex appeal on the characters is ratcheted up.
Yeah, fair. So in a complete 180, his second question.
just from the
other side of things, we have, you know, one side we have a very kind of adult, kind of mature, you know, intellectual kind of question. Not that this question isn't intellectual, but you'll see what I mean. He asks, if the Juggernaut was still in possession of the Crimson Gem of Sitorak, couldn't he totally kick Superman's ass, since one, he has to be comparable in power, and two, his powers are magic-based?
What is this gem business?
Basically, what happened
that
Juggernaut is not a mutant. He found this magical gem that gave him the power to turn into the Juggernaut, and that's how he gets the power of the Juggernaut. So his powers are magic based.
So is he the only non-mutant X-Men?
No, there have been others. There have been throughout history. There have been other people like the cop. What's her name? Stevie or whatever. Like there have been people who Charlotte Jones. I mean. There have been people who have been official, unofficial X-Men. Although Juggernaut has never really been – he's been in the book, and he's now part of Excalibur, but I don't know. Don't get me started into it. But so his powers are indeed magic-based. And whether he's comparable in power, I mean, I don't know enough about Superman to know. I mean, Connor, this is almost a better question for you.
Well, I don't know enough about Juggernaut, so we're at impasse. But if his powers are indeed magic-based, then probably, yeah, he could.
But the thing is that Superman, I mean, nothing can stop the Juggernaut, and he's strong. But, like, Superman can just fly and leave.
That's true.
I would imagine Superman just laugh and be like, see you later, you know, and
true, or you could pick him up and throw him into space.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I would say Superman would win. Unfortunately,
I think the flight would do it, but I mean, the magic is Superman's only weakness. Besides,
right? Kryptonite. But how is it that like he comes upon magic and he just falls to the floor like kryptonite?
No, but if you had like a magic knife, you could cut him with it.
Right, but he's just like so Superman might feel his punches because they're magic based.
Right,
but that doesn't necessarily mean that they would decapitate him.
No,
right.
No, I would think simply for the flying aspect, he would win because he could find a way around him and just pick him up and throw him into the sun.
Right.
He's got Batman in his corner too.
Okay, so that was Steve's question. We got an email from Simone from Colombia, actually, in South America, which is awesome.
Live in a place.
he's a faithful listener, and he hasn't gotten the increasing quote unquote annoyance factor that has made him unsubscribe from other comic podcasts. So
thank
you very much. Yeah, give it time, exactly.
Give it time.
Three more episodes, we'll be there.
So he's got a couple of questions. The main reason he's asking, which we'll probably follow up, Simon, with you over email, is that he's coming to the States and going to be in D.C. and New York in May, and he wants to go to a comic book store to get some money, so of course he wants to know where to go.
Right. And
we'll follow up with you with some addresses and things like that. But he also wanted to know, which is a good question, he said, not being used to the U.S. comic market, being somewhat ignorant about the differences between TPB, hardcovers, hardback, slipcases, oversized, omnibus, digest, blah, 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 could we suggest what would be the smartest choice in his situation? What should he look for in terms of price, value, and number of issues collected, discounts, etc.? And what stores should he take a look at for?
Boy, there's a lot of stuff to talk about in there.
Well, I think it boils down to how much money you have and how much you want to spend. I mean, the thing is that...
We could give you thousands and thousands of dollars of suggestions.
Right. Like, if you're looking to build out your library, any of those beautiful, absolute hardcover editions from DC, like Watchmen and Crisis and stuff like that they put out are awesome. And the Marvel Omnibus series, like they did for Alias. And I think Kirkman did one for Invincible, too, actually.
Yeah, and Walking Dead.
Walking Dead, like they're just beautiful, but they're expensive, you know. So, I mean, what I tend to do is when I look for trades, is I look to see how much I'm, you know, how much bang for my buck. You know, I try to get thick ones and the kind of landmark storylines that I want.
I mean, it all depends. There's too many factors to really narrow it down.
Right.
From the area of practicality, keep in mind that books are heavy and they add up. You got to take this luggage back.
Yeah.
Something you might want to think about.
They might want to order them. And just
I mean, shipping. Like literally, like it's always fun to go into shops now, and I really hate to say this, but like, it's hard to beat like ordering stuff from, you know, Amazon or wherever if you want to go for value and sort of convenience. And you find that if you go on, like I think Connor and I were finding, we were all in all these great shops overseas, but really, while it would have been fun to go shopping, it would have been like way more expensive and a pain in the ass to bring everything back.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
I just took the total fun out of your trip. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how many stores there are in Colombia, so it sounds like he's pretty prepared to get his stuff.
That could be true.
On a side note, I did pick up the Marvel Essentials Nova the Human Rocket big thick black and white reprints from the 70s, and it's fantastic. although I wish that it wasn't in black and white. I wish it was.
Well, that was my next question: is how do you feel about the black and white aspect of
yeah,
it?
Yeah, no, I mean the thing is, the art is still good. I mean it's still readable. I mean it's not like I'm missing out. I mean I guess I'm not missing out on anything. I guess and back then those were colored really poorly and all that kind of stuff. But I don't mind the black and white as much as I dislike the newsprint. You know, like the cheap stock. So anyway,
go ahead.
What?
For the sake of if it was me, what I would do is, and I've done this when I would go to New York City or whatever with you guys, I tend to buy a lot of trade paperbacks.
Yeah.
That's, you know, like, and I, for some reason when I would go like comic shopping with you guys, I always tended to buy like historically significant stories that I'd never read. Like I would buy, you know, Justice League by Keith Giffen and DeMatteis. You know, like that one. What's that called?
Justice League.
It's just Justice League, right. Like I bought that and I bought like – I ended up starting things like I'd buy the first couple Preacher books or like, you know, just things like that. I go and like when I go into other stores that had a bunch of stuff that my regular comic shops didn't normally stock, I would just sort of go nuts. I
buy trades when I have to fly because it's just to read on the plane. I mean, that's been my, like, I don't have a reason to buy a trade unless I need something to read on the plane. I want to read comics and I don't want to bring individual issues. So, okay, I'll buy a trade. I've always been kind of like how you do, Josh, that I've always been meaning to get, you know.
Right.
So I don't know. He has a couple other questions. He wants to know what's wrong with Word Balloon, given the guy likes to suck up and say yes to everything, but he finds those interviews kind of informative. And I think he's referring to another podcast called Word Balloon, which I actually haven't listened to yet.
I haven't either. I don't think we've said anything about Word Balloon,
which has come up in conversation a lot. And I'm going to check it out.
But, I am too.
I think that the nature of people talking to comic creators tends to be a little on the suck-up-y kind of side.
Well, especially if you're a fan. I mean, because if you're doing a podcast, you're probably just a fan.
Right.
And the fact that you've gotten these people to come on, you're like, wow, you're really grateful and you want to be happy about it.
You don't want to annoy them and piss them off.
Right, yeah. And
you don't want to bring him on there and assault him. You don't want to be Bill O'Reilly.
Although it would be, I mean, for those of you who are in the New York metro area and know sports or whatever, and Connor will understand this, I mean, I think comics could use, like, a Mike and the Mad Dog who would do, like, a real hard interview and
well,
call.
Well, sure, they could, absolutely. The problem, the nature of the business is, though, that it's mostly fan-run stuff, and fans tend to not do that.
Right, yeah. But, you know, but the thing is that, you're right. I mean, but it would be nice to see somebody call somebody out. That's all I'm saying.
Well, if you had, like, professionally run podcast or show that was professional, people got paid and it was a job, and
right,
then you probably have a different outcome.
And then it's part of the promotion.
But the thing also is that, like, and if you've listened to the Marvel podcast, which I ranted about this week, they often put their press conference calls on, and even
awful, by the way.
And even the paid comic journalists or whatever kiss ass.
Right. You know, they're all just fans.
But yeah. It's also, I think, the nature of the comic industry, and that they expect to be treated that way, and when they're not, there's no expectation of this piece is going to slam me, everyone's going to kiss my ass. Is usually what the idea is,
right?
And you see when it doesn't happen that people get annoyed.
Yeah. So who knows? Anyway, but so we'll check out Word Balloon. And
but I really don't believe we've slammed them.
Yeah. No, I don't think
I've never heard of them.
In fact, the day before we got this email, I was looking at podcasts. I was like, let me try to find other ones. And I was like, oh, Word Balloon. Maybe I'll check this one out.
That's the other one that keeps coming up on the website is one that people really like.
Yeah.
So
when they should be listening to us as opposed to anybody else. No.
Over and over.
Just kidding. Anyway, his last question is, if the three of us walked through the Siege Perilous and woke up being the judges on American Idol, who do we think would become who?
That's the best question ever.
Well, first, I think we have to explain to Josh what the Siege Perilous is.
Can you explain to me what American Idol is?
Yeah, exactly. I don't watch American Idol either. But
I don't, but that's a great question.
In X-Men, the Siege Perilous was a collapsible extra-dimensional gateway with mystical powers that basically it came out of the whole Captain Britain, multiple universe, Roma, Saturn, Merlin kind of world.
I'm sorry, can I just before you keep going. Now, I ask this question a lot. Did you just pull that description? Collapsible extra-dimensional parallel gateway.
No, I'm reading out of Wikipedia.
Okay, because I would have been really impressed.
Yeah, no. Basically, if I had to give my definition, it would be some sort of portal that opens up that you get sucked through, and it's mystic. And
okay.
So, anyway, but apparently what it does is you pass through the Siege Perilous, and then there are some mystical judges who judge you and then teleport you back to Earth and transform you, and normally like the result is that you're naked, you have amnesia, and you've been transformed in some way. And in the X-Men in the mid-200s, they systematically, the entire team got sucked through the Siege Perilous, and there was a while where the X-Men were gone because nobody knew where they dropped off, you know. And, like, for example, Rogue woke up in the Savage Land and had to fight Ms. Marvel for her powers again, and I honestly forgot where everybody else ended up. But the thing is that it doesn't change who you are. So I don't think it would turn us into the American Idol judges, and honestly, I wouldn't want to be them. So I think we're just going to leave that question as it is, unless you guys want to volunteer to be someone to be Simon.
Am I the jerky guy?
I think Josh would have to be Simon.
Oh. Yeah, I'd probably. Let's not even. Do
this. you know what he just did in his mind? He went, "Oh crap, I'm Paula Abdul."
Yeah. Anyway, so our next question comes from Jim, who is another user on the site who we've seen before. I got to take issue with Jim because as everyone knows, last week I wasn't able to be on the podcast, and he says
isn't it good to have him back, says Connor.
Yes, it is.
And he says, like a very fine wine or cheese, the podcast just gets better with age, which, okay, thank you. Even without Ron this week, who I am partial to because he seems to be much more Marvel based like me.
Backhanded, yeah.
Which is, okay, cool, Jim. You and I, we're paisan. He goes, the show still ruled. In fact, you may be stronger without him. Jim, in the matter of two sentences, you tell us that I'm your favorite, and then that they're better off without me. What's up with that? The way I kind of see it is like, you know, when, you know, a baseball player goes on the disabled list and the team still wins without him. It's still a team effort, but you're glad when he's back. That's how I read it, so.
I was in Josh's room in between meetings in London, and we were checking our email, and we read that email, and we went, ugh.
Jim of little faith. It's very upset. And I was excited because I thought I was doing this by myself, and I was going to give Jim an all-Ron podcast. Hello, and welcome to the iFanboy podcast. My name is Ron. This week I read 5 books. No, but no, so whatever. Anyway, so on to his question.
He's wrong, by the way. We're not stronger without you.
Whatever. Thank you. His question was, he was about to buy some boards and bags today, but since he already had $40 worth of books in his hands, he decided against it. He stopped to think how much he spends yearly, which at 15 to 20 books a week is about $90.
Boards and bags, I imagine?
I guess. That's another 30. Yeah, I guess on boards and bags.
90
yeah.
bucks a year.
Yeah, 90 bucks a year. So that's another 30 books a year. And so he said, finally, the enigma. How do we store our books? He knows modern readers have been conditioned to preserve our comics because they could be worth millions someday, but he never plans on selling them or have the delusion that they're going to be worth much. So should he stop bagging and boarding his books or just boarding?
I stopped doing that a couple years ago.
Yeah, and you've got a scary tower of comics that scares me every time I see it.
It's been diminished. I moved them off my shelf. But I, you know, for a while, I was like everybody else. I had all my books in bags and boards, and I had them in the long boxes, and I just stacked them up. And I still put them in the boxes, but a few years ago, I just stopped with the bags and boards. I mean, really. The only reason I had to put them in there was to keep them in the condition to read later on. But, I mean, there's no delusion of them ever being worth anything. So then I just eventually stopped putting the bags and boards altogether.
I still bag and board because I'm a creature of habit.
I've seen a steady degeneration of my sort of archival processes. Like early, like I would bag and board and then tape them shut and then put them into alphabetical order. And then after a while, I stopped putting them in order and then I stopped taping them. But I've been lucky because for the last 5 years or so, the two stores that I've been to both give out free bags and boards.
That's really cool. I wish my store did that.
So that makes it an easier choice for me.
Yeah.
If not, I don't know where I'd be. I'd probably be along with Connor. Especially if he's there, then I definitely would be. That's my guess. But I can understand it. Like, the instinct. Even in a person like me who just, like, I do not want anything to do with the speculation of the whole thing, you know, the instinct is still there. Like, well, I'll just put it here. Yeah. Like, if I'm not a collector in that sense, but if I look at a book and I see, like, a crease in the cover, I'll pick up the one under it.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, just years of habit don't go anywhere that quickly. So get a store that gives you free bags and boards, and that'll take care of your problem.
Yeah, or just keep, you know what's $90? You know, it's a drop in the hat. Come on. Anyway, I don't know. I still do it just because, I mean, because they fit in the boxes better. And I've got this, like, whatever, like, bizarre fear of, like, a flood or something. And, the bags would protect them, especially since I don't tape them. But I don't know.
It'll – well, if you don't tape them, it won't at
right.
all.
Yeah.
You know,
anyway.
You can fit more in the box. Though.
Yeah, that's what I was
yeah,
about
no,
to say.
I know. But still, whatever. But they stand up with the board. Anyway, whatever. Who cares? So you do what feels right to you, Jim. So he had a PS question that leads into our next email. And his PS question was, we should have bought that copy of Fell Number 4, Ellis is the Man. And he wants to know if he wrote a cowboy book, would you read his stuff? And I don't read cowboy books, so I don't know, guys, if he wrote a cowboy book.
I don't think the genre makes a difference.
Yeah.
I'm not an Ellis fan, really. So, actually, I'm not currently, and I used to be. I miss Transmetropolitan.
So and that question leads into our next email from Phil, which was absolutely shocked at the April 9th episode to hear that none of us have picked up Fell, and he can't recommend remedying this enough. He's a War of Zelen fanboy that he admits, but this is quite honestly the best work he's ever done.
That's saying a lot.
And thinking it will read better in trade merely proves that you guys have no clue what this book is about. Let him explain. The whole point of Fell is to be a cheaper book, $1.99. That's also slightly shorter, 16 pages plus the bonus stuff at the end. But tells a full story in every issue. Almost every page is 9 to 12 panels in order to maximize the amount of story Ellis can stuff in one issue. This is by far one of the best books on the market right now, and you guys seriously owe it to yourselves to check it out. Ellis has said he's unsure whether or not it'll honestly be collected in a trade. It'll probably will be at some point, but there's definitely not the ideal way to read it. And he hopes we give it a shot. Keep up the great work. He does his own podcast that you can hear at evilavatarradio.com. It's about video games, but he likes comics too. And I haven't checked it out yet, Phil, but I will. And I can't speak for the other guys. But, I mean, the thing is that he makes a compelling argument. And
they all have. I've never received so much vitriol as on a book.
Right.
I believe I was called a tool.
Yes, you were. Let's not revisit that.
But I spoke out of turn, I think. I didn't have enough information on it. You know, typically, I haven't read a Warren Ellis book in a long time that I've liked a lot. That's my taste. It's not to say he's bad. It's not anything. But his stuff isn't really doing it for me anymore. And I was, I mean, like I said before, gigantic Transmetropolitan fan. And likewise, you know, I loved The Authority back then. But I think after that, his style changed a little bit. I'll give this book a try. I will. I haven't seen it, like, to pick it up or thought about it when I'm in the store. But listen, you guys have all said to buy it. I'll buy an issue. I'll give it a try, and then, you know, I'll give you my honest opinion.
And so, over the past couple of weeks, as it keeps coming up, I've stopped and looked at it in the store, and I look at the cover, and I flip through it, and I'll be honest with you, folks, I have no desire to read it. But considering the vitriol, maybe I'll try to read it in the store and see if I'm, you know, buy into it. I've never been a huge Ellis fan. I appreciate, you know, the work he did, but yeah.
I just have a problem with buying books in the middle, even if they're not meant to be continuous.
You also have a problem with being told what to do.
I do.
Yeah.
I don't like being told what to do. Screw you guys.
Anyway, so all right, we're running long, so let's get to the last question here. Jamie wrote us asking if any of us gets the magazine Men's Fitness.
No.
Which is just hysterical, so whatever. Anyway,
actually, I think I've probably bought it once or twice.
And I'm not surprised. Although, he says that the magazine does have a lot of sex talk in it, so even though he's still out of shape, it has its perks.
No, I'm married.
Anyway, but he's writing because they for some reason they did like a Clash of the Titans NCAA kind of type thing about who is the fittest superhero in the galaxy.
That's dumb.
And the headline was like before Wolverine and the Man of Steel duke it out at the box office in this summer's X-Men 3 and Superman Returns, we decided to put the comic book all-stars against each other to determine who's the fittest, most powerful made-up guy or gal on Earth. And they got Jim McLaughlin, the quote-unquote the world's preeminent expert on imaginary comic book fights, to preside over the hardcore slugfest. And his first question is who this McLaughlin guy is. Jim McLaughlin, not that guy, not the old guy. He worked for a long time at Wizard. He used to do the letters column at Wizard. He was one of the editors, and then recently he was the editor in chief at Top Cow, and I think he's moved on from there. And he also works a lot with that actor charity. So he's been in comics, but not actually I don't know. He's not a comic creator, but
he's been a
journalist, I guess. But he was an editor, so whatever. So he apparently he does whatever.
He was a snarky guy who did the letters column. I think he was also in charge of their fake battles that they would do every month.
Yeah. So
which is why he's the expert.
So in lieu of time, he gave us all the results. In lieu of time, we're not going to go through every one, but rather just some highlights. Apparently, Hulk versus Silver Surfer, Hulk won.
Yeah, Power Cosmic, which we talked about before.
Yep.
Come on.
Yeah.
But this is not who's more powerful, it's who's the most fit.
Fittest, yeah. Although Jamie points out that he didn't feel as if it wasn't a judge of who's fittest, just who's more powerful. But even then, Jamie, you're wrong, because Silver Surfer is more powerful than the Hulk, but whatever. Spider-Man versus Rogue, and they gave it to Spider-Man, which
I disagree. They also spelled Spider-Man wrong, apparently.
Without the hyphen, yeah. Irving Spider-Man.
Green Lantern, Captain America. Green Lantern is not more fit than Captain America.
Right, but Green Lantern would take out Captain America in a fight.
Right, but
he's not more fit.
That's not the competition.
Batman, Black Panther.
Ugh.
And Black Panther wins.
Not even a... Batman wins this whole thing, by the way. It doesn't matter. If you ask me, we've got a tree of people. Who wins? Batman.
No.
Yes, JLA.
Most fit.
JLA number three.
Yep. And then
I'm waving my finger right now. You can't see it, but JLA 3.
Yeah, anyway, yeah, it's true. But then it goes on to say that, you know, basically it ends up being that Hulk versus the Green Lantern and the Hulk wins.
How is the Green Lantern the second most fit person in comics?
I think that they're just – and it was John Stewart Green Lantern from the cartoon, not even Hal. I think this is just a stupid men's magazine about fitness, and basically Hulk is the bulkiest, muscly guy, you know.
And why did they put Archie in there randomly?
I think for humor, whatever. It's pretty lame. As Jamie says, it's pretty lame. But he can't forgive anybody who spells it Spider-Man. But he wanted to know if we saw it and who we thought would win. And Josh thinks Batman wins. I think that somebody like the Silver Surfer or Thor always wins.
It's not a strength competition.
Well, you know, I really don't care.
Let that part go. Let that part go. You're going, these people are all up against each other. Who wins?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, then it's Silver Surfer or Thor or Superman, but...
And here's why, and this goes back to this. I think it was either riffed from a Seinfeld episode or was in a Seinfeld episode or I had an argument with somebody based off something that happened in Seinfeld, but Thor versus Superman. All right, Thor wins because Thor is a god, and Superman is a Superman. He's not a god. So... Like, when you're getting into gods and cosmic and entities and stuff like that, if somebody can blink you out of existence, I don't care who you are. You're blinked out of existence. You're not going to win. So, that's just me.
Can Thor do that? Why didn't you just do that with Ultron?
Thor can, I don't know what Thor can do. Anyway, so that's all of our emails. That was a lot of emails. So thank you guys. If you want to email us, if you have more inane questions you want us to argue over, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. We love getting emails from you guys, and we talk about it, you know, for days after you guys send it to us. So it brightens our day. So thank you.
We're
so
starting to get too many to do.
Yeah, we're gonna
have good,
so, yeah. And we're going to try to respond to y'all quickly. I know normally we don't respond until we talk about it on the podcast, but we'll try to at least let you know that we got it. And you know, but we have day jobs, so bear with us. But contact@ifanboy.com.
I want to mention something really quickly before we go. I forgot to mention it earlier.
Okay.
I don't know if anyone noticed in Marvel Comics this week there's an ad for a DVD of The Avengers.
Okay.
I did see that.
$29.99 for every Avengers comic over the past 40 years on DVD.
Oh, they've been doing that for a while. I have all the Spider-Man comics on CD, actually.
That's a really great, really great deal.
Yeah, it's and the Spider-Man collection is pretty cool. Although it was interesting because I got the Spider-Man one as a gift a couple of years ago, and so it was before they were putting them on DVDs. And it was interesting because they were all in PDF format, and there wasn't like a reader, or there wasn't like a menu. It was very kind of bare bones, but it was all the content. And I'm pretty sure
every 535 comics plus annuals up to December 2005. It's
yeah, that's
bucks.
Really cool. That's really cool. If somebody wants to buy us this, we'll review it.
No, I don't have time to do that.
I know you have to. I'm on issue 320.
I have all the Cerebus comics here on my hard drive, and I'm
yeah,
just like,
I haven't even touched those. Yeah. No. But whatever, what can you do?
There's also outdated ads for these. If it was at the back of a bunch of books. There's for the Burton U.S. Open Snowboard Championship that came out in all the books this month, advertising something airing on April 15th.
Oh, well, what can
so
you do?
So every single ad missed the date. Way to go, comics.
All right. Let's bring this mother home. Frapper map, frapper.com/ifanboy. Connor, how are we looking there?
133. We literally just have somebody join while we're doing the podcast.
Oh, cool. While we're doing the podcast. Look at that. Instant. Since we did so many emails, we won't call out people on the Frapper map, but you can go check it out, and there's a lot of people there. And
we actually had a really slow week. There's only about three people that joined since last
yeah.
week. So.
And have we hit the apex?
No, because we know there are more people downloading it than hitting the Frapper map. So
there you go.
As long as there's a gap between those two numbers, I won't be happy.
All right.
But, so frapper.com/ifanboy, you can click the link on our site. Come to the site, ifanboy.com. There's, as usual, some great discussion, right, guys?
Yes.
Yes.
Even though you left me alone all week to fend the users by myself.
It went on its own, like an automaton of its own devices.
It was pretty cool.
Yes.
So, all right. So anything else that we're missing, or?
Nah.
No, I think we've talked enough.
Yeah, I think we have too. My jaw hurts from all this yapping. So, all right, well, have a great week, and be sure to come to the site. Tell us what you think. Tell us what you thought of Daredevil and the other comics this week, and we look forward to talking at you again next week.
Thanks very much for listening.
Bye-bye.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.